I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. All right, we are joined now once again by Gayla Cawley, who is a journalist. I almost said sports journalist because that automatically comes out. But she's a news journalist for the Daily Item of Lynn and itemlive.com. And Gayla, welcome back to MSO.
Thanks for having me.
Well, so many stories, so little time. Lynn, of course, staying in the so-called red zone. We'll get to that in a minute. But even more importantly, I think everything is so interconnected. A little bit about the Lynn budget, if you would, please, Gayla, because we've talked with Sale and we've talked with Senator Bruce Tarr about the budget. What's happening in Lynn?
Yeah, so Lynn actually got a higher than anticipated state aid allocation. So earlier in the year, they had been pretty conservative with what numbers they were budgeting as far as cuts they were making and not filling certain positions that were open or people who had left or not filling jobs that they probably kind of needed right now, including IT positions. But the thing that drew the most attention last week when the budget was being discussed and voted on was this hire that was proposed by the mayor. A diversity, equity, and inclusion officer. So that position was basically supposed to be focused on increasing diversity in City Hall, the community, the hiring process, bring more diversity into that. So the position was budgeted for $72,000 to $90,000. That was included with this supplemental budget that he was proposing. An additional $6.67 million increase that was then added to the budget. So the budget was actually approved, that increase, but this position, the city council was not happy with the process that the mayor undertook with that. They thought they weren't really included in that process. One city councilor actually mentioned that the first time he had heard about that position was reading about it in the newspaper. So that what the city council decided to do is approve the budget, but they funded that position down to $1. So they didn't actually reject the position. They just took away the funding for it until they actually saw a job posting and knew more about what that position would entail. So that's something, a position that came out of racial justice conversations that have been going on between city officials, mayor's office, city council, and community leaders. So the mayor's position was that he had actually talked about that position several times during those racial justice conversations that the city council had been involved in. But it seemed to have been a miscommunication somewhere because councilors said that they didn't really know about it until reading about it.
Yeah, and I see that you quoted Buzzy Barton. We know Buzzy Barton very well, and when he's opposed to it, then it's got to raise a few red flags here. So, what was this? Something that he kind of sneaked into the budget itself, or how'd that work? What was the process like, Gayla, so that this thing just went off the rails so much on that one item?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I mean, the budget was posted, the supplemental budget was posted a couple of weeks before this meeting on the city website. I'm not sure. What the communication was as far as getting it into the council's hands. I know that usually they get a copy of the proposals ahead of the meeting. I'm not sure if that was if they didn't get it actually 2 weeks ahead of time or if it was a few days. But there was a miscommunication somewhere because, I mean, Buzzy Barton said he didn't know about it. And I know that I think that he's been involved in those racial justice conversations. So I don't
sure.
I don't know, maybe it was discussed, but it wasn't actually said, like, you know, I'm looking to do this.
Okay, well, you know, it sounds like a story that's going to end up okay. It's just, the devil is in the details, I guess, and I invite people to, get the item because Gayla is going to be following that for a while, I presume. And speaking of following stuff, Gayla, the COVID story, I'm hoping we're near at an end, but we're not yet, and Lynn continues to be in that red zone.
Yeah, actually, Mayor Thomas McGee, he joined Boston and several other communities in rolling back to phase two, step two of the state's reopening plan yesterday. So with that announcement, certain businesses are required to close starting this Friday in Lynn, including gyms, fitness centers, like instructional classes that are focused on arts, education, athletic facilities, bowling alleys, batting cages, museums. Indoor dining is actually allowed to keep on going as is, but there's going to be some restrictions on bar seating.
Mm-hmm.
So if people want to continue with bar seating, they have to actually get approval from the city's health department. So he was saying that this is, the mayor that is, was saying that this was aimed at keeping social gatherings to a minimum, because he had actually said, I believe it was last month, that the small social gatherings, especially those that happened around the Thanksgiving holiday, are really driving the significant uptick in cases that have been seen in the past few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So today, actually, on a related note, City Hall shut down because there were several cases among staff members.
Oh, boy.
So City Hall is shut down today, and it will be shut down tomorrow as well.
Good heavens. You know, this might be an unfair question, so I'll ask it maybe in the future. Have you had a chance to gauge the reaction from Lynners, or at least restaurant owners, or anybody involved in the rollback? Because, you know, I know I live in Gloucester, and some of the stuff on Facebook from the restaurateurs, they understand, I guess, but this is so, it's so crippling to them and other businesses. Where this is so new, I'm not sure you've had a chance to talk to anybody, but have you got a general feel on how people are thinking about this?
I mean, I haven't had a chance to talk to them since the news broke yesterday, but mm-hmm. I mean, I would imagine that it's difficult right now. I know that some restaurants, not around here, but some have decided just to close down for the winter.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, they can't bring in the revenue that they were looking for with the way things are set up with COVID restrictions.
Well, something else I know that you'll be following in the item. And in a related story, I think, more or less, is you have a story up here from a couple days ago about a group of Lynn teenagers who are starting a holiday drive to help families out and at-risk students. Can you tell me a little bit more about that, please?
Yeah, so I mean, I think this is just another effort. There's been a lot of different groups that have taken initiative to try to lessen food insecurity during the COVID pandemic. There's especially been a lot of efforts around the holidays. So this is a group of Lynn teenagers who are part of the Shannon Collaborative Youth Crew. It's that organization works with at-risk students and young adults, mainly Lynn High School students. Although the age group that's allowed goes up to 24, all of these students that were involved in this effort are teenagers. So they're basically collecting toys, and they're they have a fundraising effort, a raffle to collect funds to purchase gift cards. They were initially looking to buy turkeys for these families who are in need, but the gift cards they're going to use to buy, they're going to purchase gift cards. So those families can purchase turkeys of their own. I guess it's just a safer mm-hmm. Method of doing things right now with everything that's going on with COVID.
I'm going to link to all these stories, of course, and have them on our post. And you have on your article, you have where people can make donations. And, you know, Gayla, when we talked to the Student Athletes of the Month, of which the item is a supporter of Moynihan Lumber Student Athlete of the Month, whenever I talk to them, these kids, I always feel like we're in good hands. And reading the quotations, you talk with these kids, it seems like these are not necessarily student athletes, but they're certainly go-getters. And what's your feeling talking with these kids? Because sometimes it's hard to talk to some of these teenagers, but this is a pretty amazing article.
Yeah, I mean, I think that their kids who just want to help out. I mean, I think even with what's been going on with the Salvation Army, as many meals as they've been giving away during the pandemic, there's just been a lot of youth involved in those efforts. They just say that, you know, they've seen struggles in their community. I guess maybe these kids haven't always had it easy, so they just want to give back to others who are struggling right now, like they may have been struggling in the past.
That's spectacular. You got to read this article, people. I'm telling you, the quotes on the kids, that's amazing. Well, finally, Gayla, first of all, thanks for taking the time once again today. But one of the things that is of great interest to me, and I'm trying to get more information on it from police unions and so on, is the so-called police reform bill. And you and others at the item have quite a story on that, and maybe a quick summary on what you have found and what you are writing about.
Yeah, so this is a compromise police reform bill. This came out of the governor had proposed a police reform bill. Both the House and Senate had proposed separate bills earlier in the year. And this is a compromise that came out of closed door sessions. It puts certain restrictions on, you know, it tries to make more of a universal police reform standard across the state. Maybe some departments have already been taking these steps towards police reform or taking certain steps to ban chokeholds, which is included in the bill, or limit the use of deadly force. The bill also calls for officers to intervene when witnessing another officer using force beyond what's necessary. I guess you could say that goes back to the incident with George Floyd this past spring with the officer who stood by while another officer leaned on or kneeled on George Floyd. So this also takes steps to just basically bring more accountability to policing. Police unions have really taken issue with it, say that it's some considered attack on policing or like an effort that was rushed through in response to everything that's been going on as far as social justice is concerned. So it's really split the legislature. It passed the House without a veto majority. Veto-proof majority. So if the governor decides that he wants to veto the bill, the House can't go and override it. So that went back to Charlie Baker, the governor, and he sent back a letter to state lawmakers saying that he was dissatisfied with certain parts of the bill and that he wouldn't sign it if there weren't changes adopted that he proposed. So it's kind of in limbo right now. So the legislature can either make these changes or it might be something that won't pass as proposed.
Well, I know I've talked with people involved in forming the bill, and it's my concern, and I think you addressed it pretty well, you guys, all of you who reported on that, that police were not involved enough in this. And I think, you know, if you remember back in July or August, whenever this first came to light just before the break, people were screaming to push that bill through at that time, and I'm glad the legislature took this long, and Governor Baker is saying maybe we should relook at this. I know how busy you are, man. This is awesome, all the stuff that you're doing. I got to ask you one quick question about your job. With COVID now, Gayla, are you necessarily having to do everything on the phone or by Zoom, or can you actually get outside and cover stories?
You know, it's kind of been a mix. I mean, I've definitely been doing more of the interviews over the phone, still in the office, watching meetings over Zoom, conducting some interviews that way. But there have been times when I've been out. Everything, as you know, has been kind of switched over to a virtual format, so there's not as much opportunity to do in-person work right now. Hopefully that changes in the months to come when things calm down with the vaccine.
Yeah, we're getting there. And it's gotta be hard to interview people through masks anyway. It has to be difficult. Good, it's good.
Yeah, you got the hearing problems with the mask. You can't, things are a little bit muffled.
Yeah, and I wear glasses, so I can't see as well either, so, you know.
True, no sunglasses. Okay.
All right, that's Gayla Cawley of itemlive.com and the Daily Item of Lynn. This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.